Welcome to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with your host, Hank Hanegraaff. The Bible Answer Man is the radio ministry of the Christian Research Institute, designed to equip believers to defend their faith and become true disciples of the Lord Jesus Christ, because life and truth matter. Our phone number is 888-7000-CRI. You can find us on the internet at equip.org. If you'd like to ask Hank a question, then call in now. Just dial 888-ASK-HANK. That's 888-275-4265. And now, to begin today's broadcast, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. It's always great to be in studio as we answer your questions live throughout the United States, Canada, and around the world. The number to dial, as always, to get your question answered live on air today, as Randy just mentioned, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. We'll be going to your calls in just a moment. Again, the number 888-ASK-HANK. Do remember our contact information on the web, equip.org, via the mail. It's Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And as always, resource consultants, they are standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. I mentioned on yesterday's broadcast that we are running a very substantial deficit this month, and we would deeply appreciate your consideration of supporting the ministry this month. You can do that, again, on a safe, secure fashion on the web, equip.org. When you give this month, be pleased to send you our resource of the month. It's Watchman Nee's Sit, Walk, Stand. And do remember, for those who join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team, be pleased to personalize one of my books to you, a family member, or a friend. Let's go right to the phone lines. First up today, Jen, listening in Sylvan Lake, Alberta, Canada, CJCA. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Hank. Thank you so much for taking my call. I am calling today to find out. I have a friend who is going to seminary, and she also is attending a school or a church in Vancouver, who wants to send her to a course in Florida on healing ministries by a man named Francis McNutt. And she was asking for my opinion, and I don't know anything about him. And I tried to research, but I couldn't find anything out. So I was just going to find out if you know anything about his theology and his healing ministry, and if you just have insight on that.
Well, I do. I wrote about him in a book titled Counterfeit Revival. Father Francis McNutt is a Catholic priest who traces his initiation in the slain in the spirit phenomenon to the faith healer Catherine Kuhlman. So he himself experienced being slain in the spirit at one of her healing ceremonies, and from that first confusing experience, he has become one of its most prominent promoters. Now, as I've said many times on the broadcast, slain in the spirit has no basis whatsoever biblically. It's a phenomenon that, ironically, he confesses he has seen used by evil spirits. He has seen it as a manifestation of voodoo and other magic rites, that it is found in different sects in the Orient, as well as among primitive tribes of America, Africa, and Latin America. And so what is interesting is that he recognizes that it has no biblical base, and yet he continues to promote it along with a lot of his false and fake healings.
All right. Well, that definitely answers my question then. I will tell her that and pass it along. Thank you very much for that.
You got it. In the book, Counterfeit Revival, is available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. You can check it out on the web at equip.org. Let's go back to the phone lines, talk to Bob. He's listening in Washington, D.C., Sirius XM 131. Hi, Bob.
How are you doing, Mr. Hanegraaff? Bless you and your ministry. Thank you very much for taking my call today.
You're welcome.
Call about Ephesians 1 and predestination. Fundamental question: does God know everything that will happen, or does God know everything that can happen and all possible permutations therefrom?
Well, God knows everything that will happen. He knows all things exhaustively. And the fact that he knows what is going to happen in the future does not mean that the future is fatalistically determined. As I've said many times on the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we as human beings can see this from an experiential perspective. We can look back at things that happened in the past. We can have exhaustive knowledge about what happened because we were there, we watched it firsthand. But the fact that we watched it or saw it or know about it does not, of course, mean that we caused it, that we were the causal agent of it. So the fact that God then knows not only the past exhaustively, but the future exhaustively as well, is not the same as saying that the future is fatalistically determined.
Do you understand sort of the difficulty I have and what I perceive as squaring the circle in how that seems to deny my free will then?
Well, I don't think it does. If you were fatalistically determined, as you are in philosophical naturalism's worldview, then it would deny your freedom. But this does not deny your freedom at all. You are certainly free. And the fact that God knows what you are going to do or what you are going to freely choose in the future does not mean that those choices are not free. And that's anything but a squared circle. If we were talking about fatalistic or theistic determinism and then trying to square that, as it were, with the circle of freedom, I think that would, in fact, pose a problem. But that's not what I'm communicating.
Okay. Do you have any writings that you've discussed on this that I might be able to reference in order to be able to take a look at?
Yeah, I do. I've written about this in various places. In fact, there's an entry in my book, Afterlife.
I'll take a look at that.
Yeah, which deals with this.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
You got it. Thanks so much for your call. Let's go back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Jeff in Marysville, Washington, KCIS. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Hank. My question is on John 1:3. It says in there that, you know, all things were created by God, and apart from him, nothing was created. And then it says that has been created. There's no period, there's no comma, and I just kind of wanted to get some clarification on that second part of that that statement there, you know, where it says that has been created, because it's like John's trying to say something there.
Yeah, what John is saying is that through Christ all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. So John is simply saying that Jesus Christ is the creator of all things. And of course, that idea is communicated in Colossians as well, when we read from Paul's writings there that Jesus Christ is before all things, and in him all things hold together, that he is the one, in fact, that creates everything, that nothing has been made apart from his making it. So this simply elevates Jesus Christ as the one who spoke and the limitless galaxies leapt into existence. He is the creator of all that is.
Okay. So the reiteration, it's basically a double reiteration that everything was created by Jesus, and that's it. I mean, he's just emphasizing there. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. That is precisely what the text is saying. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. So you have correctly parsed that out as a reiteration, an emphasis of sorts.
Okay. Good enough. Well, thank you, Hank. I appreciate that.
You got it. And of course, as I was mentioning, in Colossians, we see the supremacy of Jesus Christ. He's the image of the invisible God. He's the firstborn over all creation, for by him, and then the words, all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Do remember that this is a ministry supported by listeners just like you. Without you, we couldn't do what we do, mentioned at the top of the show, that when you give, be pleased to send you one of the resources that we recommend. This year, we've recommended Privileged Species, New Atheism by Graham Veal. We've also made available Islam, What You Should Know, and now Watchman Nee, Sit, Walk, Stand, a classic. All of these resources you can find on the web. You can select one when you give this month to the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute, the Bible Answer Man Broadcast, our outreaches around the world. Also mentioned that we are very, very close to the end of the month. We have a looming deficit this month. Anything you can do to help with that would be deeply appreciated, used for God's glory and for the extension of his kingdom. Let's go back to the phone lines, talk to Mike, Omaha, Nebraska, Sirius XM 131. Hi, Mike.
Hey, what a blessing to hear from you. Hey, I go back to old Walter Martin days. I got a question. I got a friend of mine out in California. He's kind of backed away from really church attendance, and he listens and watched, religiously, this, Shepherd's Chapel with Murray, and it's just like he's just forsook all fellowship, and I can't talk to him about Scripture because he winds up quoting this guy, and I'm just going, whoa. So I was just wondering if you had anything that I could read or to just find out where he's coming from.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is, obviously, it's very dangerous to separate from church fellowship. I mean, it is within the context of the church that we partake of the means of grace, most particularly through the Eucharist. And so to separate yourself from that, I think, is a very, very serious thing. And then to be listening to someone like Arnold Murray, that's double jeopardy, because this is a man who denies the Trinity. He believes that men were gods who existed prior to their life on earth. He teaches Anglo-Israelism. It's the idea that the Anglo-Saxons are the chosen race. There are so many other things that could be mentioned. He teaches a serpent seed doctrine, the idea that Eve had sex with the snake and bore Cain, and there you have the Kenites, as he puts it. He teaches annihilationism, and on it goes. So this is a dangerous guy to watch, dangerous in that he not only denies essential Christian doctrine, but he takes secondary issues that we can debate vigorously and shouldn't divide over and elevates them to the status of essential Christian doctrine. So again, maybe double or triple jeopardy here for your friend.
Wow. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to really check your website. Anything you recommend that I could get more information?
You know, I don't know. Can't remember off the top of my head if we've done an article on Arnold Murray, but I'm sure we have a fact sheet or an article available. If you'll hang on, we can get it out to you, or else you can check the web at equip.org.
I'll check the web.
Well, thanks for your call. And we are a ministry that produces an award-winning magazine. It is called the Christian Research Journal. And if you are not subscribing to the Christian Research Journal, it is an award-winning magazine, and I don't think you should be without it. You can subscribe to the Christian Research Journal online at equip.org, or you can write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Resource consultants are also standing by, so you can subscribe by talking to one of our resource consultants at number 888-7000. And the letter is CRI. There's an Ask Hank column in the back. In that column, I write in the current edition an article titled Annihilating Abortion Arguments, and abortion itself has been reduced to an acronym so you can remember the arguments and how to refute those arguments with gentleness and with respect. Have you ever heard the argument of rape and incest? Well, to annihilate arguments from rape and incest is a most difficult task. The emotion of the argument often precludes serious examination of its merit. Though every case of rape and incest is horrific, one cannot hope to obviate the pain of it by compounding it with murder. Two wrongs do not make a right. The very thing that makes rape and incest evil likewise makes abortion evil, the brutal dehumanization of an innocent human being. Again, the article in the current edition of the Christian Research Journal. Check it out on the web, equip.org.
Richard Dawkins' grasp of philosophical argumentation wouldn't earn him a passing grade in an undergraduate philosophy course. Yet, the dumbed-down ridicule he and other new atheists wield slides effortlessly past a growing number of college students receptive to such ridiculous rhetoric. Graham Veal's concise book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, offers an accessible, penetrating, and practical resource for countering new atheist attacks. To receive your copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide, as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Don't go away. Hank Hanegraaff will be back in a moment with more of the answers you need today. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The seven deadly sins are vices that undermine loving God and loving others. The virtuous life, by contrast, is one that resembles the image of the truest human, Jesus. Character cultivation begins not with moralistic endeavor, but with a relationship with God and Christ, which in turn transforms our character. Other topics include, is Christianity bad for your health? Why we lost the culture war and how to make a comeback? Morality, therefore God, an evangelistic strategy, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI. Or subscribe online at equip.org. In The Atheist's Guide to Reality, Enjoying Life Without Illusions, Duke University professor and new atheist philosopher Alex Rosenberg bites the bullet and declares that to be a consistent atheist, you'll have to be comfortable with a certain amount of nihilism, and just in case, there's always Prozac. Because a growing multitude of college students are drinking deeply from this nihilistic nonsense, we shouldn't be surprised that so many of our national spiritual and cultural indicators are headed south. Graham Veal's concise book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, is an accessible, practical resource for responding to the nihilistic nonsense of new atheists. To receive your copy of New Atheism, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's mind-changing and life-transforming outreaches. Or visit equip.org. Watchman Nee observed in the letter to the Ephesians that three profoundly relevant themes for the Christian life were ordered in a particular way. Our position, seated in Christ, our walk with Christ in the world, and our stand for Christ against the enemy. An all too common mistake occurs when Christians attempt to walk in the world or stand against the enemy in their own power, not realizing that Christianity does not begin with walking or standing. It begins with sitting. In his classic little book, Sit, Walk, Stand, Watchman Nee expounds on the timeless truth that the starting point of the Christian life is being seated with Christ. To receive Sit, Walk, Stand as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. Alex Rosenberg, professor of philosophy at Duke University and a devout atheist, bites the bullet in noting that if atheists desire to enjoy life without illusions, they must realize there is no meaning or purpose of life, and there is no moral difference between right and wrong. In other words, Rosenberg says, an atheist will have to be comfortable with a certain amount of nihilism, and just in case, there's always Prozac. Tragically, multitudes of college students are now drinking deeply from this nihilistic nonsense. Graham Veal's book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, is an accessible, penetrating, and practical resource for responding to the nihilistic nonsense of new atheists. To receive your copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide, as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. We now return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you, Randy. And one more reminder that we hit the end of the month tomorrow, and so whatever you can do between now and then to stand with us prayerfully and financially would be deeply appreciated. And used for God's glory and for the extension of His kingdom. When you give, be pleased to send a resource to you that will equip you to always be ready to give an answer or reason for the hope that lies within you with gentleness and with respect. You can find those resources on the web at equip.org. And those that join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team, I'd be pleased to personalize one of my books to you, a family member or a friend. Again, check it out on the web at equip.org. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to George in Tacoma, Washington, Sirius XM 131. Hi, George.
Hi, Hank. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
As soon as I get off the phone, I'll help you with your deficit.
Thank you.
But I have kind of a two-part question for you. I've been listening to a teaching series by R.C. Sproul, and one thing I was kind of confused about, he's talking about the five different solas. Sola Scriptura, Sola Fide, Solus Christus, and all of that. And he was talking about the Roman Catholic teaching on the treasury of merit, which I really got kind of lost in his discussion on that. So I wanted to ask you about the treasury of merit. And the second part to my question is, he was also talking about indulgences. And I'm a graduate of Oral Roberts University many years ago now, but I was thinking about, when I was a student there, Oral Roberts used to have these weekend seminars where he would invite, you know, his partners to come in for the weekend, and we would work as students on the tour buses to bring these people to the campus. And I remember thinking, most of these people looked very poor, they looked very desperate, and they'd get to these meetings with Oral Roberts, and he would be asking them to plant their seeds, to give this money, and their lives would be turned around if they planted their seeds with Oral Roberts' ministries. And I was thinking, in a sense, wasn't that another form of almost an indulgence? That people were being asked to give money, thinking that that money would somehow merit them some kind of a reward from God. So I wanted to get your comment on the treasury of merit, and in a sense, are some of these ministries asking people for money almost an indulgence in today's world?
Yeah, I don't think that there's any question about that whatsoever. I mean, it's a give-to-get scheme, and it is a manipulation, which is completely unnatural. You talk about the indulgences within Roman Catholicism. I mean, this was the idea that Johann Tetzel popularized: as soon as the coin in the coffer rings, the soul from purgatory springs. In other words, there's a way in which what you do can merit or add to the stream of merit for another person. Now, certainly that's manipulation, And what there is in common with Oral Roberts is that in both cases, there is a manipulation that is taking place. There's no basis whatsoever for the idea of purgatory, nor is there any basis for the idea that when you give, somehow or other, that treasury of merit advances someone else's spiritual condition after they have died. And I think that this idea of seed faith is another manipulation, very much like what happened with Johann Tetzel in the 16th century. By the way, this whole idea of treasury of merit was reaffirmed by Trent. So I think that the kind of manipulation is that which oftentimes is ployed with respect to gullible Christians, the kind of Christian that you are describing, being bussed in and then throwing their money to the faith preachers in hopes that God is going to throw back 100 times as much. One has to do with what's going to happen in the eternal state. The other is, well, if you give a dollar, you're going to get $100 back. You're going to get a return. All of that, again, manipulation, I think there is where the commonality lies.
Right. Now, I want to ask you, it seems like to me, when R.C. Sproul was talking about this treasury of merit, he was saying that, well, the Pope has the keys to the kingdom. Therefore, the Pope basically is the chairman of the board of this treasury of merit, and he can dole out these merits as he sees fit. But the question that R.C. Sproul brought up, which I agreed with, was, well, if the Pope has control of all of this merit, why doesn't he just use it all up and get everybody out of purgatory at once? Why is it a prolonged... This is why this whole treasury of merit thing, when I was listening to R.C. Sproul, it just didn't make any sense. Because if the Pope has control of this, then why doesn't he just get everybody out of purgatory with his kindness and say, okay, we're going to use up the treasury, we're going to get everybody out of purgatory, and everybody's going to be in heaven, period.
Well, I don't know that Catholics define this as the Pope having control of it. And not only that, I mean, as you've already pointed out, or as we've discussed, the whole idea is based on a flawed premise. The flawed premise being that there is such a thing as either limbo or purgatory. Neither exists. They are a figment of imagination, certainly not something that was taught by the early church fathers, but something that now is dogma within Roman Catholicism.
Right, and do you personally endorse R.C. Sproul's ministry?
Oh, I think he's one of the finest teachers that we've had in the modern epoch. I deeply appreciate him. He's the absolute real deal. I mean, I don't agree with some of what he teaches. I don't necessarily embrace all of Reformed theology. But I can tell you he's the absolute real deal. I know him well personally, had the privilege of playing a lot of golf with him over the years. And so, yeah, I couldn't be more positive about a Christian teacher. He is as fine as they get.
Okay. Well, Hank, I think you're as fine as they get, too. So thank you for what you do, and I'll help you with your deficit when I hang up.
Thank you. Deeply appreciate it.
And have a good day. Thank you.
You as well. You know, in a book titled Ashes to Gold, Patty Roberts, who was related to Oral Roberts through his son, compares the seed faith practice of former father-in-law Oral Roberts to Johann Tetzel's practice of selling indulgences. And she actually pointed out that she had a very difficult time distinguishing between the selling of indulgences and the concept of seed faith inflated to the degree that Oral Roberts inflated it. One distinction that she did observe was that Oral was more subtle than Johann Tetzel. Rather than offering salvation in exchange for money, oral appeal to such basic instincts as fear and greed. And of course, he is not alone. His tactics have become standard fare among the faith peddlers. And while they may not promise their partners heavenly paradise, they do promise them earthly prosperity. Like Tetzel, many of them have become masters at inventing catchy couplets to make their ideas both understandable and memorable. One seed faith ditty goes, have a need? Plant a seed. The seed of giving, said Oral Roberts, is the seed of faith, and the seed has to be planted before we can speak to our mountain of need to be removed. Simply stated, planting a seed is synonymous with mail me money. The seed faith gimmick is little more than a give-to-get gospel of greed. You know, it's ironic that I'm communicating this very thing, at the same time letting people know that they can invest in the ministry of the Christian Research Institute, the Bible Answer Man broadcast, and our outreaches around the world. But you will never hear me say, give and you will get. Certainly we send you a resource, but the idea in sending you a resource is not that you're going to get some kind of a bonanza, but rather we want to equip you to always be ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within you with gentleness and with respect. We also want you to be equipped in the area of union with God, experiencing life practices, experiencing living discipline so that we can have an experience with the living God. As I've said many times, truth matters, but life matters more. Why? The analogy is simply a menu and a meal. I can have a menu, I can define the menu, debate the menu, defend the menu, I can memorize each word of the memory, the menu, but the fact of the matter is the menu points to something, that something is the meal, and that we should never forget. It's not enough to simply memorize the menu. We need to understand that that menu points to an experience that we can have with the living God. Jesus Christ said as much when he said, I have come that they may have life and have life to the full. So what Oral Roberts and his son Richard have done is use both television and the mail to raise millions of dollars. And their methods have been described as the lowest form of emotional appeal. In their mailings, they appeal to the sympathies of their partners as well as appealing to their greed. And I think therein lies the problem. You have people who are already struggling, and now you appeal to a sense of greed. You say, okay, give me what little you have. And God has to, based on his promise, return a hundredfold what you have given. And so what they're doing is over-promising and underperforming. While Roberts attempts to sanitize his seed faith theology by surrounding it with scriptural pretexts, his theology is strikingly similar to that of well-known metaphysical prosperity cults like the Unity School of Christianity. So again, watch out for the cons and cover-ups. I've written about them in my book, Christianity in Crisis. That book you can find on the web at equip.org. We'll be right back in just a few moments with more answers to your questions, so please don't touch that dial.
New atheists are surreptitiously stealing hard-won intellectual ground once defended by people of faith. Their dumbed-down but winsome ridicule slides effortlessly past the growing number of uncritical minds receptive to such nonsense. Graham Veal's book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, is a very accessible, penetrating, and practical resource for responding to this new atheist nonsense. To receive your copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide, as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Stay tuned.
Hank Hanegraaff will return in a moment to answer more questions.
Some time ago, the Christian Research Institute changed its tagline from "Because Truth Matters" to "Because Life and Truth Matter." Reason being that for Christians, truth and the abundant life are inseparable. It's no small clue that Jesus said he was the way, the truth, and the life. Tragically, in matters of life, Christians often try to walk with Christ in order to one day sit with him. But this is the reversal of the true order. The concise book Sit, Walk, Stand by Watchman Nee explores timeless principles from the book of Ephesians, which demonstrate the truth that we advance in the Christian life only as we learn first to sit down. To receive Sit, Walk, Stand as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. Richard Dawkins' grasp of philosophical arguments wouldn't earn him a passing grade in a freshman philosophy course, but he doesn't mean to deal with the questions that theists are asking. He simply ridicules his opponent's position. In New Atheism, a Survival Guide, Graham Veal explains, "The new atheist stance is that the reasons for theism must be so bad, why even read about them? My goodness, no, you just dismiss them." Veal goes on to show that the new atheists have not offered one original argument for atheism, but they've plenty of original insults. New Atheism offers an accessible, practical resource for countering new atheist attacks. To receive your copy of New Atheism, a Survival Guide, as our thank you gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Recent atheist writers claim to find real physical and psychological harm in Christian teachings and practices. However, careful analysis of this literature reveals numerous flaws, false assumptions, and factual errors. The real question is whether it is the Christian life or the atheist life that best corresponds to reality and provides for genuine human flourishing. Other topics include the seven deadly sins and the path to virtuous character. Does the Levitical prohibition of homosexuality still apply today? And much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Christians today are exposed to relentless attacks on theism by so-called new atheists. Will a weakened Christianity survive the new atheist? Graham Veal's book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, will help you understand the new atheism and how best to respond to the threat it poses. To receive your copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide, as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Now, back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
And right back to our telephone callers. Next up is Bob listening in Hanson, Arkansas. Hi, Bob.
Hi, first-time caller, long-time listener, and thanks for taking my call, Hank. My question is about the serpent, you know, in the Garden of Eden, when he was communicating with Eve. My question is, what do you think the serpent looked like before it got changed into a snake? You know, he said, "For your punishment on thy belly shall I crawl, and dust shall I eat all the days of thy life." But so, I was just kind of wondering what it looked like, you know, before it got changed into a snake. Think it just looked similar, just with maybe two legs, or
no. Look, you have to look at why the Bible describes Satan as a twisted serpent whom God alone can crush. The metaphor is pregnant with meaning. Let me cash that out for you, because the biblical imagery of the twisted serpent is a portrayal of Satan's fall. So once he held a privileged position in God's kingdom, but now he becomes even lower than the livestock. They have legs. He, however, crawls on his belly and eats dust. So those who know the Old Testament immediately recognize the metaphor. Micah, like Moses, uses the imagery of a serpent to depict nations seeking to thwart the purposes of God. They will lick dust like a snake, like creatures that crawl on the ground. So the idea here is that this is a metaphor. This is not what Satan looks like. It is what Satan is like. After all, Jesus Christ did not defeat principalities and powers of darkness by stepping on the head of a snake.
Right. Okay. I just appreciate your ministry, and sometimes I listen to, I travel, I'm a truck driver, and these preachers, I don't know how the people listen to some of them, but I just appreciate you because you preach the truth, which is by grace alone, by faith alone, by Jesus alone, and if Christians can ever grab that concept, I think they'll be a lot happier, but we also need to support ministries like you. We need to support you spiritually, physically, and financially, but it's just some of these, I pick up these radio stations, and it's just depressing. They're so legalistic. It's like, well, if you don't do it this way, you're going to go to hell, but we know we should live right. I mean, that's a constant theme, and what does that do? Your best, and then God do the rest. And I was born again. Were you? I was born again in 1979. Is that when you was born again, Hank?
Yeah. 1979, yeah.
I think, the best I can tell, there was a movement of God during that time. My brother was born again in 1978, and there's a lot of people I talked to that. But you know what? It's progressively getting better. I mean, I'm sinning less and less with less frequency, less and less, and it's something that, you all put your feet on. And I listen to programs like you and R.C. Sproul, and I support R.C. Sproul each month. John MacArthur, I support each month. And I'm going to talk to my wife, and I don't see why we can't support you each month. And we've got money going to our church, and we're helping somebody else too. But you know what? I think it's going to probably, $25 a month. But if a lot of people do that, that's where I send to John MacArthur. That's where I send to R.C. Sproul, and we're helping a widow out and give money in church. And maybe it's a Lord blesses us, we can up that, I'd say if a lot of people send in just $25 a month, well, I guess that would help you out, wouldn't it? I mean, that's what I figure,
there's no question about it. I mean, what I've said many times on the broadcast is if people give on a monthly basis, it would supercharge the ministry. I don't know how else to put it. So thank you very much for your prayers and for your support. Deeply appreciated.
Okay, God bless you. Thank you, Hank. Bye-bye.
You got it. And remember that if we're going to read the Bible literally, it means that we read it as literature. And what that means, in turn, is that we are to interpret the Word of God just as we interpret other forms of communication in the most obvious and natural sense. So when Moses uses the symbolism of a snake, we would do violence to his intentions if we interpret him in a woodenly literal fashion. And here's why. A literalistic interpretation does as much violence to the biblical text as a spiritualized interpretation that empties the text of all objective meaning. If the historical Adam and Eve did not eat the forbidden fruit, if they didn't descend into a life of habitual sin resulting in death, there would be no need for redemption. If, on the other hand, Genesis was reduced to an allegory conveying merely abstract ideas about temptation, sin, and redemption, devoid of any correlation with actual events in history, the very foundation of Christianity would be destroyed. The prophet Moses describes Satan as an ancient serpent. The apostle John describes him as an ancient dragon. And again, as I mentioned earlier, they don't intend to tell us what Satan looks like. They want to teach us what Satan is like. Dragons, after all, are the stuff of mythology, not theology. So if we think of Satan as either a slithering snake or a fire-breathing dragon, we not only misunderstand the nature of fallen angels, but we might well suppose that Jesus triumphed over the work of the devil by stepping on the head of a snake rather than through his passion on the cross. So Eve was not deceived by a talking snake, as though snakes have vocal cords. Rather, Moses used the symbol of a snake to communicate the wiles of the evil one who deceived Eve through mind-to-mind communication, precisely as he seeks to deceive you and I today. The ramifications of taking Satan and giving him creative power are draconian, to say the least. If, in fact, Satan can materialize, well, then he could have masqueraded as a resurrected Christ, and now you lose epistemic warrant for the central event in the Christian faith, the post-resurrection appearances of Christ. So there are a lot of ramifications that you simply don't want to go there. I've written about this in a book called The Creation Answer Book, also available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute, the Bible Answer Man broadcast. You can check it out on the web at equip.org, back of the phone lines, and we'll talk to Robert. He's listening in Springfield, Missouri, on Bot Radio. Hi, Robert.
Yes. Hi, Hank. I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener. I'm a retired physician, and I worked at ORU many years ago when it was what was called the City of Faith Hospital building, and I can assure you that just giving to get stuff turned me off then. In fact, I immediately left when I realized what was going on. Having said that, I was recently invited to go to a church down in Branson, Missouri, and this guy named Keith Moore, after about 20 minutes of a praise and worship sort of startup, he projected onto a screen a fuselage of an airplane, a jet he wanted, and he had it colored out. Now we need to start paying for this, part of my point. You know, it just infuriates me, this sort of thing. I immediately walked out. This giving to get stuff, these guys are con artists. Why is it not being stopped? Is there no way of stopping these guys?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Their power and their prestige is so great that there are otherwise normal pastors that are having these faith teachers in their pulpit. I'm absolutely shocked, for example, at some of the churches that invite T.D. Jakes to speak, and the kinds of honorariums that they pay him to come and speak at their church. Well, part of it is because they're garnering a huge crowd, but yeah, it's the fact that they have such popularity and such position that if you say anything about it, it is extraordinarily costly, and I can tell you firsthand from a ministry standpoint, that is the case. I can also say that firsthand from a personal standpoint. When I wrote Christianity in Crisis and exposed the kind of shenanigans of Oral Roberts and Richard Roberts and the like, of Benny Hinn and Paul Crouch, there was a huge price to be paid, and that price continues to be paid. But the ministry is not the place to be politically correct. What you ultimately have to do is speak the truth in love, but don't fail to speak the truth. The reason that so many of these pastors have huge platforms is because they can pay big dollars to radio stations, to television stations. They have huge, huge audiences that they bring to others. And so people, instead of speaking out, they simply stifle. I remember when I wrote my book, The Astinification of American Christianity, there was a pastor in our neighborhood that started promoting Joel Osteen as one of the great men of God. But the reality is that what he is teaching is decidedly dangerous to believers. What usually is not communicated is the dark underbelly of the teachings. and the fact that people like Osteen, they mock paraplegics. Why? Because if they had enough faith, they would simply get up out of their wheelchair and walk. And that's the idea. And it is communicated in such a way that people buy, or I might say, bite into the poisoned apple without realizing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's time for, maybe I'll write it, another Elmer Gantry. In a metaphorical way, kind of expose these guys, not taking them on directly, but in a sort of a creative way, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, I wasn't created. I mean, I name names in Christianity in Crisis. I don't pull any punches, and I wrote a book called The Osteenification of American Christianity. I only use that word as an umbrella term because Osteen is the biggest of the bunch.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just a joke. It infuriates me. I must say, as a retired physician, it just galls me. I can't tell you. My father was a pastor, been a Christian all my life. You know, Bible believing, reading, and you know, in the Old Testament, nobody ever gave God something so they could get merchandise. I mean, it wasn't like that. That wasn't the spirit of it at all. You know what I mean? It wasn't a give to get thing. It was
a give
to God, and then whatever happened. But you know, anyways, enough said. I appreciate your ministry, and I will. I'm going to sign on and begin contributing to your efforts.
Thank you so much, Robert. Appreciate your call. We are out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Do remember, Monday through Friday at this time, your questions answered live when you dial 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. Be right back here tomorrow, live with more.
Thank you for joining us today. Followers of the Lord Jesus in our time are exposed to relentless attacks on theism by so-called new atheists. Graham Veald's concise book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, will help you understand the new atheism and how best to respond to the threat it poses. In appreciation for your gift to help strengthen and expand the mind-shaping ministries of CRI, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you a copy of New Atheism, A Survival Guide. Just call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. Of course, you can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271, or simply visit us online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Watchman Nee observed in the letter to the Ephesians that three profoundly relevant themes for the Christian life were ordered in a particular way: our position seated in Christ, our walk with Christ in the world, and our stand for Christ against the enemy. An all-too-common mistake occurs when Christians attempt to walk in the world or stand against the enemy in their own power, not realizing that Christianity does not begin with walking or standing. It begins with sitting. In his classic little book, Sit, Walk, Stand, Watchman Nee expounds on the timeless truth that the starting point of the Christian life is being seated with Christ. To receive Sit, Walk, Stand as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. In The Atheist Guide to Reality, Enjoying Life Without Illusions, Duke University professor and new atheist philosopher Alex Rosenberg bites the bullet and declares that to be a consistent atheist, you'll have to be comfortable with a certain amount of nihilism, and just in case, there's always Prozac. Because a growing multitude of college students are drinking deeply from this nihilistic nonsense, we shouldn't be surprised that so many of our national spiritual and cultural indicators are headed south. Graham Veald's concise book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, is an accessible, practical resource for responding to the nihilistic nonsense of new atheists.
To receive your copy of New Atheism, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's mind-changing and life-transforming outreaches. Or visit equip.org.